This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Tuesday, December 19th. I'm Jeff Bossert. Coming up, how one city near Chicago aims to rid of its highways and noise congestion. And a look at your AM 580 weather forecast for Champaign-Urbana, but first, today's news. Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich on Monday signed into law a $1-an-hour increase in the state's minimum wage. Starting next July, Illinois businesses will have to pay most employees at least $7.50. Then comes three 25-cent hikes, raising the minimum to $8.25 by 2010. The law does not include annual increases tied to inflation. For that, Blagojevich told reporters the blame belongs to State House Speaker Michael Madigan, a fellow Democrat.
We're going to go back in January and try to encourage the Democrats in the House to encourage their Democratic leader to be for working people and give us a cost of living increase. Fight and work for working people, not for the different special interests that are trying to block a cost of living increase for the hardworking men and women in Illinois.
A spokesperson for Madigan said the wage hikes signed will help low-wage workers more than the governor's plan. Business groups say increasing the minimum will hurt the state's ability to attract and keep jobs. Supporters of the higher minimum wage say Illinois children will benefit. They point out that more than one in five minimum wage workers are parents. Sean Crawford reports.
Many parents who work low-wage jobs find themselves still unable to feed, clothe, and provide shelter for their kids. Any extra money would be a salary boost for those families. Several analysts say it will be a powerful tool for improving the lives of children. They say it will mean better nutrition and health, and that results in better learning in school. Kim Lightford is a Chicago Democratic senator who sponsored the wage increase.
There's this myth out here that it's teenagers who are working for minimum wage and that it's just extra money for their pockets. But the reality is that there's families and households who are raising children on this low income.
Lightford says in some cases, parents making more through the minimum wage might be able to quit a second or third job and spend more time with their children. But others point out the higher wage still won't be enough to bring most families out of poverty. I'm Sean Crawford.
The son of a Danville couple found shot in their home last week has been arrested in connection with a year-old murder in Texas. 32-year-old Manuel Alvarez was taken into custody in Danville yesterday. His parents, Felipe and Justina Alvarez, died after an incident at their home last Monday. Police tell the Danville Commercial News that they've made no arrests in connection to those deaths, but Manuel Alvarez was wanted on a murder charge in Donna, Texas. A primary election will be held in Champaign in February to pare down the high number of candidates seeking at-large city council seats next year. 10 candidates filed petitions for the three council seats by yesterday's deadline. AM 580's Jim Meadows reports.
The candidates include all three at-large council incumbents, Deb Finan, Geraldo Rosales, and Tom Bruno. Bruno says the election will serve as a referendum on the city's efforts at economic development.
The community will have to decide whether we want to continue the successes we've enjoyed over the past 10 or 12 years, or whether the community wants to make a complete change of direction.
Bruno predicts Champaign voters will choose to continue on the current path. But challenger Bill Glitherow, making his third bid for a council seat, says the city's older neighborhoods need more attention.
Repair on the sidewalks, repair of the streets, the sewer systems that have problems in certain parts of the area. There are certain parts of our community, especially in the older neighborhoods, that don't have street lights and some of the basic amenities that you see on all of these things that go onto the edge of the community.
The other at-large council candidates are David Short, Michael Henley, Freddie Gordon, Annette Williams, Karen Foster, and former Champaign County Board Chair Patricia Avery. They'll all face off in a February 27th primary, with the finalists going to the general election April 17th. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Also on the April 17th ballot, Champaign Mayor Jerry Schweihart will run for a third term against first-time candidate Charles Mingy. Marcy Dodds will run for her District 4 council seat unopposed. Services are set for the superintendent of a small school district in eastern Illinois after he died of a heart attack during a weekend shopping trip. Mark Connolly was 53 when he died Saturday in Danville. He led the Hoopston Area School District since 1998 and was principal at the Hoopston High School the previous 8 years. Connolly was a native of LaGrange and had worked in the Hoopston schools since 1978. His wife Mary is a teacher in the district. The couple have two sons, Michael and Matthew. Visitation is from 3 to 8 today at Anderson Funeral Home in Hoopston. Services will be at 11 Wednesday morning at Hoopston Area High School. A fundraising effort is underway to help disadvantaged kids in Champaign-Urbana receive eye care. About 200 grade and middle school students whose families are on public aid are expected to fail the state's required vision screenings. Gail Rost, executive director of the Champaign-Urbana Schools Foundation, hopes to change that through grant funds. Rost says most of these families have few options when it comes to further eye exams or getting fitted for glasses.
Illinois public aid bills aren't being paid, and so retailers and clinics take a very limited number of these patients because they need to run a business, and they're not getting paid from the state in a quick way.
Ross has started a new initiative called SPECS, or Seeing the Possibilities for Every Child's Success. It's already received $2,500 from the Urbana Rotary. That will provide 30 eye exams by the end of the year through a local optometrist. Ross says SPECS is planning a vision care summit for late January, so healthcare professionals and funding sources can find a permanent solution to the problem. For the latest newscast online, go to wiol.uiuc.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Jeff Bossert. Highways are unwelcome, noisy, polluting neighbors to people who live near them. They're so imposing that it's hard to imagine making one disappear, but that's exactly what one town might do. Shauna Lee reports they hope to create some new green space in the process.
Architect Fred Brandstrater and I stand on a bridge above a freeway that runs through Oak Park, Illinois.
I'll tell you, that sound you're hearing now, that's, you know, anyone who lives a block on either side of this expressway, it's like that. There are times when you can't even talk across the street because it's so loud.
He ought to know. He lives near the Eisenhower Expressway, or what people call the Ike. What really galls him is how the Ike divided the town in the 1950s.
First of all, not only do you have the eyesore, but you've got all these residents here. You've got a school tucked in back there.
That we can see.
Right, that you can see. You've got a conservatory right there, and this cuts right through the middle of it.
And you can't rid Oak Park, Illinois of this scar without getting rid of the expressway. Or can you? Brandstrater is with a group that wants to turn a mile and a half of open expressway into a tunnel. Supporters want to put 60 acres of park on top. Traffic would move under the new park space. It's hard to imagine how this highway could just disappear. On the other hand, this was a thriving neighborhood 50 years ago. Some people still remember it that way.
We are right on the banks of the lovely Eisenhower Expressway. Enjoy it.
You say that with a little bitterness. Why is that?
Well, because it is my mortal enemy.
Peggy Studney says while the Ike was being built, it claimed dozens of her neighbors' homes, and she put up with lots of construction.
And when the pile driver was pounding, the bed would vibrate. And often in the morning, you'd find you'd have to push your bed back 3 feet to the wall where it was to begin with. And that went on for 5 years.
50 years later, she contends with heavy traffic noise and pollution. But despite all that, she does not support the plan to put a park on top of the Ike. She worries the project will bring back years of construction clatter. Project supporters face a big obstacle. This would be the longest freeway cover in the nation. The state won't help, so they'd need federal money, maybe $1 billion of it.
That's a major trend in downtown roadways all over the country.
Robert Brugman teaches architecture, art, and urban planning at the University of Illinois at Chicago. He says Phoenix and Seattle already put parks on top of existing freeways. Brugman admits such projects are expensive, but they let cities balance transportation and the need for space.
The urban freeway, just like the railroad before it, made a big gash into the city necessarily. That's what happens with all great big infrastructure. And then the city grows back up around it. As the land around it becomes valuable, it becomes very worthwhile to deck them over and create all kinds of amenities where you had mostly noise and pollution before.
Back in Oak Park, architect Fred Brandstrater and I walk along a sidewalk near the Ike. Brandstrater explains the state's planning to rehab the Ike soon. He says that would be the perfect time to deck the expressway. Doing both at the same time will save a lot of money. Before long, someone interrupts our conversation.
Hi, Peggy.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Ah, Peggy Studney. I'm glad she's here to clear something up. Again, Peggy Studney does not support Brent Strader's plan to cover the Ike. She worries it will prolong construction.
I couldn't stand the thought of it.
Yeah. They're going to tear up the expressway anyways. It's going to be ugly anyways.
Fred will tell you his side of the story.
Yeah.
But you know my side of the story.
I do.
I hate that thing.
Yeah. I'd rather have go through the pain and have the end result be, 60 new acres, of most of which is park and open space, as an end product than all the noise I hear and have to scrub my porch every weekend because of all the particulate matter.
Architect Fred Brandstrader believes the problem can be solved through good design, and he says the Ike isn't such a powerful foe anyway. It took money and political will to divide his Oak Park neighborhood. Brandstrader contends it will take more of the same to fix it. For The Environment Report, I'm Sean Ali.
The Environment Report is a production of Michigan Radio. Support comes from the DTE Energy Foundation and the Great Lakes Fishery Trust. You can learn more about Environment Report stories and subscribe to weekly podcasts at environmentreport.org.
And the forecast for the region, sunny skies today with a high of 45 degrees. For tonight, mostly clear, a low again around 28 degrees. And for tomorrow, mostly sunny, the high around 48. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Tuesday, December 19th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, as well as other helpful information at our website, wiol.uiuc.edu. I'm Jeff Bossert. AM 580 News.